You are listening to an entertainment program put together by a company called Financial Ineptitude. Anything said on this show is not an endorsement or professional advice. Would you really want to tell a court of law you were suing us because you thought taking financial advice from two idiots on a podcast put out by Financial Ineptitude was a good idea? Really? Clown hat, smiley face.
Financial Ineptitude presents Two Bulls in a China Shop. You can find our podcast at twobullsinachinashop.com or just search Two Bulls in a China Shop wherever you stream your podcasts. Hello and welcome to the China Shop. You've made it for yet another thrill ride of adventure. I'm Shopkeeper Dan, and with me as always is Kyle, creator of financialineptitude.com. How are you doing today, Kyle?
I'm doing good. Dodging tornadoes, but looks like they've all passed.
That's right. You ducked out of the trading room a little early.
Well, no, that was not because of that. That was because I was doing terrible.
All right. Well, glad you're doing good. We are joined today, folks. Back up off the edge of your seats. Take a deep breath by the amazing Anthony Fatsies. How are you doing today, Anthony?
I'm very well, thank you guys. How are you guys?
Fantastic.
Anthony is the host of a crypto trading podcast called WT Finance. Very, very clever name. Very jealous.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, I do a bit of a few other things as well, commodities, equities, everything like that. But yeah, my true passion is crypto and NFTs. It's a pretty exciting place.
You ever dabble with futures?
No, not myself. I'm looking into it, but yeah, I'm probably just trying to find my place, I think, in it all.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We've been kind of doing the same thing. I dabbled a little bit with crypto, but to me, it's, I don't like the nature of something that trades 24/7. Like, how do you turn it off?
You didn't like that about crypto, but so you moved over to futures?
Well, with futures, I can be done. Like, I don't treat it like an investment. Like, you know, you're trading it. When you're done, like, you're only in a position for 5 to 10 minutes with crypto. I imagine you're not, well, I don't know. I guess you could treat it that way. Like, how do you actually trade crypto then?
Yeah, you'd probably be pretty crazy doing it 5 to 10 minutes. I don't know if you guys seen the volatility, but it can be, yeah, you know, 5 or 10% in literally in that time. So yeah, it's probably more swing trading, I'd say. It just depends. Some people love that stuff, but I think it's just, especially, you know, when you get in the 1 minute or the 2 minute time frame, it's just a bit, some people call it like the crack time frames, you know, you have to be on something sometimes just to be looking at it.
Mm-hmm. So how did you find your way to crypto? Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got to where you're at today.
Yeah, definitely. So it's quite interesting. So I'm originally from Australia, and basically how it works, I decided to move to the UK. I don't know if I was crazy or not, but I decided to move over here to study at university. And sort of my first year at university, I was looking to go entrepreneurial. You know, that's what I thought I wanted to do, starting a startup. And then I don't know if it was a good thing or a bad thing, someone introduced me to cryptocurrencies. And I think, and I'm like, oh, this thing sounds pretty cool, which I'm sure everyone does. And I was like, oh, I'll put some money into it. And I think my money halved in the next day. So I was like, shit.
That's oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, wow. I got like the worst timing. If anyone knows, sort of like 2018, just after the bull run, basically. So it's on its way down. It's just around 6K Bitcoin is. And, you know, everyone's like, oh, the resistance at 6K, it's going to hold. So I was like, okay, I'll put some money in. And yeah, it went to straight down to 3K the next day.
If you're still holding it, though, you're pretty happy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So not doing too bad at the moment, but I think I was just lucky I didn't have much money at the time. That's sort of been my whole trading career. I'm lucky I got in when I didn't have any money. And then now I've sort of learned a bit more and that's made it a bit better. But yeah, from there, I was so into crypto and, you know, it expanded to sort of interest in other assets like Forex and equities and commodities and everything like that. So since then, I have a passion. I sort of work at a few finance companies doing equity analysts, and I'm in my last year of university at the moment. So it's pretty cool. And in the past year, I've just gone into NFT. So I guess it's the natural progression, crypto and then NFTs.
What about when do you go to wrapped tokens? Is that after NFT?
Yeah, I don't know. It's, oh, man. It'll be whatever's more speculative, I think. That's what everyone's looking for at the moment, isn't it?
my most burning question whenever I hear anybody's in NFTs are, do you race NFT horses?
No, I don't. It looks pretty cool though. Have you guys seen it?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I've been eyeballing it, trying to decide whether or not to take the jump. They're freaking pricey.
That was
it's almost as expensive as a real horse.
Oh, literally, probably.
Some of them are. I mean, God
yeah,
damn.
You're always getting to a thoroughbred, aren't you? Far out. But,
Daddy, you said you were going to buy me a pony. I did. It's on this hard drive.
Oh, it's so funny. You see some people get their kids involved and they're like, oh, they just, I want that NFT. And it's like $50,000. And like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll buy it for you. It is a mental space at the moment, but I think it's quite exciting as well. This, you know, it depends how you look at it. Some are obviously bought based on the art or based on the community, and others are bought on just, you know, if they think there'll be utility, like horse racing. That's a pretty cool example.
Well, I see that one to me makes the most sense, but like digitizing like YouTube videos and things like that, like I don't know, do you see that sticking around? Do you think that's something that's going to hold value for long term, or is it just kind of a fad?
I think they will have value, but it'll probably be more just based on the growth of the NFT community and the, you know, the NFT market itself. I don't think they'll be leaders though. So as you said, you know, there's some memes and GIFs and whatnot that have sold for $500,000 and, you know, sometimes more, which is crazy to think, but
right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's mental. Sorry.
Do you think that you would ever leave an NFT? Can you picture a future where you're like leaving a very valuable NFT in your will to somebody? Like, is this going to hold value like fine art does? Do you think in the future we'll get there?
I think so. Have you guys heard of the, I think it's the Beanie Babies case in like the 2000s, early 2000s or 1990s?
Well, that's actually exactly what I like in NFTs too, whenever people ask me. So they remind me, they're like digital Beanie Babies.
Yeah, and I think there was a case where they were like, they had to sit on the floor, this couple, and like separate the Beanie Babies. Like they had to choose one each, which is wow. Yeah, literally. So they're divorcing. At the time, it was worth like a couple hundred thousand. Yeah, and the judge is like, no, you have to. You know, they wanted to divide it in different ways. So, I've seen some memes where they're replacing it with NFTs. But yeah, I could see it. I don't know how soon that will happen. I know.
I was going to say, can you actually explain then what you're getting when you, like, say, Charlie Bit My Finger gets turned into an NFT and I buy it? Like, what am I actually getting?
Yeah. So it's for that case, you're basically getting proof that you own it. So how NFTs, obviously, there's a record on the blockchain proving when it was created and the transactions that have occurred after that on the blockchain. So basically you have evidence that you own this original, you know, meme or NFT that was created. So it's almost like a, you know, a signature on a piece of fine art or something like that, or like a certificate of authenticity from a collectible. That's basically what it is. Will they have value in the future? It's like most things. It depends if once someone's to buy it from you and if they want to pay how much you want to sell it for. That's the real thing. I think with utilities, with ones like the horse racing, and there's a few others similar to that, there's probably more potential that they could grow long term.
Yeah, they've got a guaranteed audience to participate, purchase.
Yeah, gamblers.
they're always a good market, aren't they?
Oh yeah. Stop. And they're used to losing money too.
Yeah, unfortunately. It's crazy to think, but yeah, so I think, and there's a few other projects similar to that.
Like what?
Well, there's some that sort of creative marketplaces. There's somewhere a lot, I don't know if you guys have had a games, like a lot of NFTs are sort of going to the games route, so it's almost like a character in a game that you can play, and you can level up this character or this NFT, and then you can sell it on to someone who wants to obviously have a higher level character. So there's stuff like that, you know, and that could expand to not just characters. It could be weapons, it could be armor, it could be it basically could be anything that you think of in a game, these NFTs, right? And
is it crazy that makes more sense to me than digitizing, you know, art? Like that makes a lot more sense to me. Like, protect your character, figure out a way to make sure that it's unique, and then sell it to somebody who wants to, you know, cheat his way through World of Warcraft.
Oh, literally. Well, people have done it. Like, yeah, you say World of Warcraft, people have bought accounts or bought gold or RuneScape from all these places. Right. If they're too lazy and they have the money, they just do it.
Sorry, you're about to say something before I cut you off there.
What I was going to say is, like, if you think about where the world is going, it's obviously going more digital, more online. And, you know, mm-hmm. it's probably going to get to the point where most people spend, you know, well, they're already doing it, but, you know, they're living in these games, virtual reality. It could be, you know, you see those crazy movies where people, there's literally these alternate worlds that people live in. Like, I think Ready Player One is right. an example. And that's, yeah. and, you know, when people live in that and then they have these NFTs, it's almost going to be like a status icon. It's like having a Louis Vuitton bag or having, and in my, I don't know if you guys know Minecraft, there's literally brands like that are big as Nike in Minecraft. And you have to pay like hundreds and hundreds of dollars just to buy this like shirts really? In my yeah and that's the thing, these kids are getting used to it, so it's going to get to the point where as they get older, you know, this is where they want to put their money. They want to be able to show off in a game rather than maybe in real life.
Right, that still makes more sense to wow. me. I could see us going down that route. I mean, it's VR gets better and better. I mean, you know, eventually somebody's going to create that virtual world where you can go and get a virtual job as a virtual blacksmith banging out swords.
Literally.
You're playing the game, but you're not even actually playing. You're actually just going to work.
My grandfather bought a plot of land by the digital river, and I'm just set for life.
Yeah, go out there, catch my digital fish, and
cook it, and then you're set.
Right.
But yeah, so I think that's where, you know, a lot of the utility is coming from. And even, you know, I don't know if you guys remember, like a few years ago, everyone was talking about blockchain as a savior for like supply chain and tracking different things. Mm-hmm. And what people are realizing is NFTs is actually how blockchain will do this. So because they're, mm-hmm. you know, if you think about non-fungible, it's basically unique. There's nothing else like it. So if you're transferring a car part from China to the US, it's this NFT, like it's basically a way to track where it's gone between the right. route to the factory into the car. That's another opportunity.
Almost like a UPC code, but just but one that you can't just draw lines and duplicate.
Yeah, literally. And it's because it's on the blockchain, it means that, you know, it's immutable. It means that no one can change it. There's no potential fraud of possible. It costs a lot and it'd be almost impossible for that to happen. So, yeah, that's another opportunity which I think is pretty cool.
So, is anybody using that now? Do you know of any companies that are using blockchains for their supply chain tracking?
Not at the moment, no. It seems like everyone's sort of jumping more on the bandwagon of trying to sell it for, you know, these fashion companies done it, and Pepsi and all these big companies are just doing it to try and, I don't know, keep up with it or. I'll just try to, be fashionable. But right. I think that's sort of the next step. And what's happening is there's a lot of development in the background. So because they have been around for a few years, but really only the last year mm-hmm. is when they've just exploded. So I think it will probably could be another year or two until we see this being implemented. But then from there, it's, you know, that's where the real opportunity is, I think.
If you mentioned like a company in China right now, they've outlawed the exchange of cryptocurrency. Are they still going to be able to exchange NFTs if they can't do crypto?
Yes, that's interesting. I'm not too sure how that would work. I guess, you know, that there'll be a blockchain. They could probably create their own blockchain, which might be what we see, where every company has their own individual blockchain, and then these NFTs are, you know, just traded. But it's not on Ethereum. It's not on Solana or any of these other. And, you know, they have many. To weaknesses as well. If you think about how much a transaction costs in Ethereum, you know, sometimes it can be right. $50 to $100 per transaction, which is, you know, I'm sure a company wouldn't want to be doing that, but when they transfer something from one factory to another. So that could be what right. happens, or they just, you know, you use another one that's a lot less expensive.
So is China actually against digital or cryptocurrencies, or are they just don't want any competition for their digital yen?
I think that's, well, the main issue has been people taking money out of the country, and they've had mm-hmm. that issue for years. If you think about, I'm not sure if it's the same in the US, but I know in Australia and the UK, there's just investment everywhere. And a lot of the times it'll be someone wealthy and, you know, it's safer to have it in Australia or the UK than having it in China, because there's less, you know, we've seen what's happened, the manipulation that happens there, and basically the control that they're trying to put on the people. If you transfer right. it to the US, Australia, UK, at least there you have, you know the laws will.
Yeah, there's not an authoritarian dictatorship that's going to, you know, freeze your assets because you criticize the financial policies of your country and of speech.
Literally, or basically destroy, yeah, to destroy your 200 billion IPO or whatever it was.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Literally. It disappeared, didn't it? It was like the biggest story ever, and then it's just disappeared since then.
I thought I saw something pop up the other day about it, about going through like another round of fundraisers, but I don't think it's going to have nearly the same valuation that it was initially, because I think the latest stuff I've been seeing too is they're trying to break that up even more.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it was based on debt, so it's like micro loans to individuals, and we've seen what's the issues that they have with debt in China, which is probably common everywhere in the world at the moment.
Yeah, yes.
I'm sure we've all talked about that so much the past few weeks. It's the only thing I've heard. And Fantasia.
God, damn it.
Yeah, Fantasia Fallen.
Forgot where I want to. There's so many things that I want to ask you about. Was it El Salvador, switching over to Bitcoin? I think we just looked at a story recently about a volcano that they've tried to turn into a geothermal plant to generate Bitcoin from. Have you been following any like the world news and any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, well, I think it's super interesting. I think it's probably a good play for, especially, you know, countries that are poorer and they might not have the, you know, obviously stability and infrastructure that other Western countries have. You know, if you look at what we've seen over the past 10 years with cryptocurrencies, you know, it's gone up over 1,000,000%. It's mental. So for them, it's a way, literally, El Salvador being the first to try and take advantage of it. You know, it won't always go up, you know, it won't always be a parabolic
right.
push up. But I think it's, you know, it's a way for them to elevate their country to, you know, you could almost say, you look at what happened in the Middle East in the 70s, where once they took control of the oil, then they've just been some of the wealthiest countries in the world. You know, could this be another opportunity for, you know, these lower income countries to actually, you know, go all in on crypto, have this investment come into their country, you know, because there's so much money in crypto, and these people, big whales, you could say, are looking for countries like this that are very friendly on crypto, that where they can use it. So, you know, it's a little bit easier. So I think it's smart. It is a social experiment though. So who knows what will happen? They're sort of leading the way, aren't they?
Does foreign governments getting involved with it, does that cause you any trepidation? I know like the US is starting to take more interest. I think that what we just said, the DOJ, I think, formed its own crypto task force. What was that? CNET, Dan, I think it was called?
NSET.
Yeah, because it sounds like NSEDs. Yeah, so the US is starting to look at trying to do some regulation. I think I would worry that the more governments you get involved in having a vested interest in cryptos, the more regulation you're going to see. And that's kind of like the big thing that attracts people to crypto, is that it's not tied to any governments or foreign entities such as that.
Yeah, well, I think it will be a massive thing because, you know, if you look at, you could say the sort of monetary policies of most of the Western countries, what they're looking for is, you know, they're saying that they think it'll be transitory inflation. You know, we'll see that in the future. Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I'm out of my breath.
No, literally. But then at the end of the day, it's a way for, you know, I talked to a professor on my podcast the other day, and he's literally saying it's, you know, it's a way for them to steal from the, you could say, the elderly people who have lots of savings and cash, and potentially redistribute it to the younger people who are, you know, they'll get it through increases in wages and all these different ways. But, you know, if you tell people that that's your plan, no one's going to keep cash. And, you know, everyone's just, and that's the issue. Like, they can't tell anyone. Like, it's the same as, you know, I just look at all these, they all have ulterior motives. They don't want you to freak out and to lose faith in, you know, in what they're doing. So I think regulation will potentially be an issue, obviously, if they prevent people from being able to, you know, withdraw into the real world. But from what I've seen, it's, you know, it is quite integrated. There is ways of doing it. So yeah, it is a risk, but I guess it depends if you're looking at it as a currency, or, you know, Ethereum is more of a, you know, a, ecosystem of smart contracts. And it's, you know, it's basically a way that you can have these businesses, like, you know, I'm sure you guys have heard of DAOs, decentralized autonomous organizations. So it's basically a business without there being anyone. It's all based on code and contracts, which is pretty cool. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah,
that sounds so futuristic when you just explain it like that.
It's, yeah, oh man, sometimes you just look at these things and you're like, holy shit, this is mental. Like, as you said, it's something that you think, you know, from a movie or a futuristic movie.
Back to the Future, right? Like,
yeah,
weren't we all bitching about where's our hoverboards and flying cars? And I think there's a robo-taxi that's just working on taking orders for delivery now. And I just saw a hoverboard in the fucking Walmart the other day.
Really? That's mental.
Like, all right. Okay. Well, maybe Back to the Future was right. I mean, hell, I think the Tampa Bay baseball team won the World Series. Was that a year after they showed them as the
Chicago Cubs?
It was the Cubs and the Rays, I think, in the World Series, wasn't it?
Wish I could have put some money on the Cubbies, was the line. Go back in time, put some money on the Cubbies.
I'll look that up while you ask another question.
If you could go back in time and tell yourself to buy one crypto 1 year ago, which one would it have been?
1 year ago. Ooh, well, just for the ones I know, I'm sure there's probably some that I'm missing. But it'd probably be Solana. Have you guys heard of Solana?
Yeah.
No, I don't think
I have heard of it.
The name sounds familiar, but I don't remember what it is.
Yeah, so it's one it's done very well. So let's just say at the start of the year, it was $1, and now it got to 220 a few months ago, and now it's hovering around 160. Yeah, so 160 times. But even if I could just do 9 months, I'd be happy with that. Going back 9 months, but
right.
But yeah, it's pretty interesting because it's another way. It's another similar to Ethereum is smart contracts, but the real benefit of this is that it can actually have lots of transactions at once, so 400,000 transactions a second, and the fees are very low. So, whoa. You know, rather than having these gas wars where you might pay $50 to your 100, potentially more if it's very busy, this is only, you know, it's a few, I think it's a dollar or less potentially. I know it's like 0.01 Solana, so it's hardly anything, maybe $1.60. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. And like I was talking to, I'm not that big in the tech, but I was talking to a friend who's very technical, and he was just saying like, it's so simple. This system, the blockchain's so simple, but it's mind blowing. Like the guy's either crazy, like insane, or is a genius who's created it. So, which basically there's no cryptography at all, the way they do it is all the computers that run a node or that, you know, the transactions, they all run at the same time. Basically, they're like these massive beasts of computers that run at the same time, and they confirm these transactions all at the same time. So there's no cryptography at all. So it basically makes it so much cheaper to do. They can do so much more, and they have smart contracts on it as well. So I'm quite... Solana would be the one, and they have NFTs as well, and that's sort of the community I'm more engaged in at the moment.
So tell me, why would Jack Dorsey be so big on Hamster Coin?
Hamster? I haven't even heard of that. What's that?
According to Jack Dorsey, that is the crypto that is the biggest threat to Ethereum or Bitcoin. I think he says it's going to be bigger than Ethereum.
Hamster Coin?
Yeah, that's what
he said. Something.
Right? Was it a joke?
I don't know.
He didn't seem to be joking.
It's hard to know. He's like, sometimes he speaks lots of sense, and sometimes it's just mental, I think. I don't know if you guys agree, Jack Dorsey. Yeah, let me have a look. Yeah, I don't think it like had a massive spike maybe when he mentioned it, and then it
probably
like,
was around that time. When was that day?
A couple months ago.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's gone up a bit. I honestly don't know. I'll have to get back to you on that. But yeah, that's the issue though, because there's so many like amazing projects, I'm sure. Yeah, and there's like, because if you think about it, there's so many developers in the world, and there's so many people who want to be like the one and the person who's, you know, creates the next unicorn or the next, you could say right. Vitalik, like who created Ethereum. So they're all sort of working on their own things, and a lot of them aren't that different. They have all these, you know, different perks and different, a few different things here and there, but most of them are quite similar. So it is quite hard.
Do any of them do anything other than like busy work for as far as like mining the coins? Like, Has anyone created a project of like trying to map near Earth asteroids or
sequence the human genome,
you know, chart the Hubble picture? Yeah. Anything like that?
I think the issue would be the price of it. Cause if you think about like how much transactions are at the moment, it's mental. So you can imagine the data that would be required to do any of those things. So not at the moment, unfortunately. From what I know, that, you know, I may be mistaken, but, and there's so much out there, but it is definitely something for the future. And, you know, if you think about, as you said, there's like the amount of power that goes into this, like you think of Bitcoin and, you know, right. I think I've seen it can run like, you know, it's the same as like, you know, states, potentially the amount of power that goes into it. So it's
over here, they're buying up gas or shut down gas and coal plants in order to turn them back on and fund the mining operations.
Oh, really? Well, we're having a massive, there's like an energy crisis. Or I don't know, you guys have probably heard of it in the UK and EU. Because I think we've transitioned too quickly to renewables.
Yep.
And then they're realizing, hang on, if you rely lots on gas and the price goes up, then you're fucked. It's very expensive then.
Yep.
Yeah. But no, that El Salvador thing you mentioned as well is pretty cool. I know Iceland, lots of geothermal energy. They're the same. Like, and that's, I think, where it, you know, obviously cheap energy, and if you can, you know, create these systems where you can mine Bitcoin and the energy is, you know, negligible, the energy cost is negligible, then you're going to be very profitable, because that's the major cost involved.
I just wish I would invest, you know, hand over fist into the first coin that does something useful with all that computing power.
Yeah, I think it's Algorand, I think. I've heard it, like, that's the issue. There's so many to keep up with, but yeah, I know. And there's so many good developers as well. Like, I think this guy is like a, you know, PhD at MIT, and he runs his own and runs this and that.
Which one? You said Algorand?
Yeah, Algorand. Have you guys heard of it?
No, I've not heard of that one.
It's quite interesting, and, you know, but they haven't blown up in price. And that's what we're seeing at the moment. Like, there's so much development happening. So sometimes the price doesn't always represent, like, you know, the value that it's actually providing. A lot of the times the price is just a few influencers mention it, or, you know, or someone, or there's a few big whales. And what I've found in NFTs as well is if you get whales behind it, so people with, you know, lots of crypto, lots of money to support it, that's when, you know, you see the other people. It's the classic phrase, like, ape in. So they see the price go up and they're like, yeah, I'm gonna get in. that's what the Wall Street Bets people and the degenerates call it. you see the price going up and you ape in.
So that's what we need, is what you're saying. We need to have a massive whale before we launch our bullish coin. Bullish light. Yeah. What are we gonna be going with?
Get Logan Paul or something to shield it.
I think it was bullish IT.
That'd be great. What's the why don't you do like two bulls in a China shop coin? Well, or something?
Because I wanted to spell bullshit.
Okay. some of them are like cum coin and like shit like that. it might have already happened. You never know.
It probably already did. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of interesting people out there.
So, but you do trade other things besides crypto, though. What else do you like to dip your toes in?
Yeah, so I've been sort of the last few months, it's mainly been equities. I've sort of had I've been working at a small equity boutique, equity fund. So it's been going pretty well. Just been looking at, they sort of looked at emerging markets. So I was looking at specifically Vietnam, which I find pretty interesting, as well as the US market. But yeah, so that I do that. Commodities have been super interesting with gas, oil. You know, I think the metals as well. There's a huge potential for that over the coming years.
What about Nigeria as far as developing markets? Do you guys look at anything over there?
No, we didn't really look at Africa. We mainly looked India, sort of Vietnam, and the Asian region. I think the issue with Nigeria, from what I've said, you know, obviously I'm not an expert, but there is quite a lot of corruption. So that could be another risk as well. From what I was, unfortunately, in like a lot of those African countries, it can be quite hard to enter. I don't know about Nigeria, but Vietnam can be, you know, you have to sort of register at a broker in the country, and then you know there's like 3 days to buy and like 2 days to sell. So it's quite a, you know, it's different to what we think about in the US or like the UK, where it's like, yeah, instantaneous. So that's what I learned over those few months. Like, there's quite a lot of barriers involved, and, you know, there's the costs that you wouldn't normally have to take into account in the more liquid markets that we trade in.
So if you call your broker and say, okay, I want to sell all my shares of XYZ, and then he says, okay, I'll call you back in 2 days and tell you what price you got.
Yeah, literally. I think you can do it over the web, but you can do it over the online. But yeah, but like, and that's how the whole stock market works. It's not even just a broker. Oh, so, God. Yeah. So, but the crazy thing is, it's only been around, I think it's only been around 15 years. And that's the opportunity. Like you think of it, mm-hmm. you know, I think the UK stock exchange has been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, you know, the US over 100 years. Right. Yeah. And you think about, you know, Vietnam, it's literally only 15 years. Like, and I think 10 years ago, it had like a market capitalization of like 10, like it's 5 billion or 10 billion, you know, tiny. The whole stock exchange was that. And even now, I think the whole stock exchange is only about 200 billion, mm-hmm. which is, you know, less than the GDP of the whole country, which is, right. you know, you think of other, the US, how big the US stock market is, or the UK, or you know, or the European, it's mental to think. So, but yeah, I think there's opportunities over there. And I think they'll sort of have, there'll be advantage with obviously the rifts between China and the US and the Western countries. There'll be a lot of advantage in mm-hmm. a lot of those, you know, India and Vietnam and a lot of those other Asian countries.
Are you having to change your strategies to deal with supply chain issues when you're doing commodities?
Yeah, I think, well, it is a pretty crazy thing to think. Like, have you guys experienced it, like, at all, the supply chain issues over there?
I mean, just weird things, just can't find. For the most part right now, it's ammo, but not too long ago, it was toilet paper and paper towels.
Yeah.
Lysol wipes, random shit like that.
Here in Tucson, Kyle, it's at the point where random store shelves will be empty.
I was just at Walmart the other day, and it wasn't too bad. I think my wife had trouble finding a fan the other day, but we went to one a couple days ago, and I had no problem finding one.
Yeah, well, you could almost say that's also a labor shortage as well. We're having that in the UK. I don't think it's happening in the US.
I think most of it here is labor shortages. Just can't get enough people to work the ports to offload the equipment, and can't get enough people to drive the equipment. It's just, I don't know, it's a really weird time that we're in. I think that this is all just speculation on my behalf, but we talked about this last episode. I think it's just a lot of the older generation that's at retirement age got forced out and then decided, hey, maybe I can retire. And so they didn't go back. And then you've also got all the younger people now who are saying, why the fuck would I want to go back and work for $12 an hour when, you know, my rent's gone up, you know, double in the last year.
Yeah. And, you know, I can empathize with them completely. I work mm-hmm. I'm a university, I work a minimum wage job. I think it's like £9 an hour, as well as doing all this stuff. And if I didn't have to, I wouldn't be there. If I could, like, I know in the US you've had sort of, you know, unemployment benefits that were quite high in the past year, and they've sort of recently stopped. I would have been doing my podcast doing that if I could have, I think. Because at the end of the day, like, it's, you know, they're tough jobs. They're not, they're horrible. Like, you have to deal with customers, and not all of them are horrible, yeah. but you get those few that just, you know, that they work you like crazy. You're always understaffed, you know, all these issues. But yeah, we've had that in the UK as well. And yeah, there was I don't know if you guys saw, there was a run on the petrol stations. So we actually ran out of, you know, gas, out of petrol.
Really?
So yeah, there was literally, the news mentioned it, like, oh, there's a supply chain issue with drivers, not enough drivers being able to actually take the petrol to the stations, and right. then everyone freaked out. So literally you couldn't get, you know, petrol anywhere or gas anywhere, so they're all shut, all the stations. Huh. So yeah, you can imagine, like, it just goes to show that this, you know, you could say it's the just in time era, which we've had over the past right. 20 years. It's really yep. being tested with the you know, almost people have started going crazy because of COVID and because of a lot of the issues, and the supply chain is just breaking down, because if there's any interruptions there, you know, it's going crazy.
So if you guys are experiencing shortages or labor shortages in the UK, like, what do they attribute it to over there? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, well, I think it's a few things. You go, obviously, you know, you've probably talked about Brexit. It's a massive thing. And mm-hmm. And I think what has happened is, obviously, there was almost unlimited availability of labor. So how it would work is, if you lived in any of the other 30 countries, you could move to the UK without a visa, basically. Mm-hmm. So that's been shut off over the past year. So that's obviously, you know, prevents a lot of young people. Yeah, a lot of young yeah. people. And I think it, you know, it may be good for potentially raising wages, because there's not, you know, if there's not unlimited supply, these employees are going to have to start actually competing for right. for the people. So that's an issue. there was also, because obviously COVID, I don't know if you guys know, there was like a red list in countries. So if you were from there, you'd have to isolate in a hotel and pay like £2,000. So that was preventing people. So people had gone home for the summer to who were residents in the UK but were European. They went home for the summer and then they didn't want to pay that money to come back. So that that was another issue. So yeah, that's sort of what I'm. Yeah, so it was like all these things combined. Also, last year, a lot of the, just looking at the truck drivers, a lot of their tests got cancelled. So I think 50,000 to 100,000 tests got cancelled. So, you know, all these things sort of culminated into one.
Oh, so new drivers weren't hitting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and probably what you mentioned before, lots of people retiring, like, you know, over COVID, they were probably worked like crazy. So a lot of the older guys and girls were retiring. So yeah, so there's all these things sort of culminated and there was a massive increase in demand. So I think it was like, normally they'd sell like 30,000 litres of petrol, or that's like what, 8 or 9,000 gallons of petrol. You know, from a station, it was quadrupled from these stations because there was people freaking out. So it was all these factors going into it. But yeah, but I think it shows that we're probably going to see a lot of, I don't know if you guys agree with this, a lot of onshoring in the future. So there's been these supply chains are so complex and they run through so many countries. And, you know, these car, you know, if you look at a car, it could have components from hundreds, you know, or maybe tens of different countries. So I think we will start to see slowly, especially with the increase of automation, a lot more people and a lot more of these products onshoring.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, sorry, that was a bit of a long explanation of it all.
Just left me a little speechless, just trying to
processing it all.
A lot of good stuff.
Well, I guess to circle back to my earlier question, because I probably wasn't asking it clearly enough, like am I understanding correctly that you'll trade in commodities? You said that.
Oh yes, yeah, so I do trade commodities as well. It's more sort of just you know, long short of the direction of the of it.
So what happens to, like, if you have a contract and the supply chain is gummed up? Are there expiration dates on those commodities contracts?
No, so I don't think you actually have it in the US, but over here you can have, you don't actually need to do option trading or futures trading. You can actually get, you can actually literally just open up a long trade or a short trade and it's almost like perpetual, like it keeps open forever. So there's no expiration of it.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's like, I think it's something that was available maybe pre-2008 in the US, but I think after that they just made it 100%, you know, options. But yeah, so you get, like, if I have a feeling of what the price is, I can literally just open up a long position with some leverage and then hold it to, you know, put a stop loss in and then hold it to the point where I think it is the best price.
Huh.
Right.
Yeah, so it's probably not using options or futures yet at the moment, but yeah, it's a way to, I guess you could, you know, all these commodities have been influenced massively by obviously the Fed and everything that's, you know, all the macroeconomic environment. So, you know, it's keeping an eye on that. And then from there thinking, okay, what direction do I think the asset's going to go based on that? And then.
So if you went long on like wheat, you couldn't just, you know, call up the exchange and be like, hey, can I take my bushels now?
No. So there's more.
Yeah.
I'd be concerned if they called me. It's more. It's 100% speculative.
Okay.
Yeah, I heard that. Like, it was during when oil went negative, these people were stuck with this, you know, these massive trucks of oil, and these. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you heard about that. Yeah, and they literally had nowhere to store it because they were speculators, but they couldn't get rid of their contracts before expiration.
Right. Oh man.
Anthony, come pick up your oil. You had the contract. You got to collect it. We don't have a warehouse for it.
Literally. So that's why I think that's why I went to negative 140 US at one point, because these traders were freaking out. They're like, where the hell am I going to put this?
That makes a lot more sense than how that actually happened. Actually, we're dabbling in it now.
Mm.
And I was thinking, like, God, to get paid to buy a contract of oil? That sounds brilliant. No, it doesn't.
No, you have to offload it, and that's why the prices massively change expiration, from what I've heard. But not normally that massive, not normally hundreds of dollars. So you guys have said you started dabbling in it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry,
we're currently sim trading.
Well, he's sim trading. I tried going live today after having a lot of good success sim trading, and once I flipped it over to the live, then everything dried up.
Oh, it's sad, isn't it?
I might be back to sim tomorrow. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. So is that futures commodity trading?
Yeah, just S&P futures.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
Trading the mini contracts.
Oh, nice. Is it, did you say weight or is it other stuff as well?
No, I just stick with the S&P. Okay. We could do oil.
We could trade anything that goes through the Chicago Mercantile Exchange.
I think we might have to change our subscription if we want to get anything other than oil and the S&P minis.
Yeah, it's crazy because over here you can literally just open up an account. You can just open up an account and put, you know, a couple hundred pounds on a long, and then
yeah, it's crazy.
You know, you can close it once. Yeah, so it's the regulation is so different over here, and it's the same in Australia.
$400 worth of margin to be long an S&P contract, which is, what is it, 1,000 times 4,400 right now?
Mm. And we have something called spread betting. I don't know if you guys have heard of that.
No.
So it's like, it's the same thing that I was saying. Like, you open up a long, but it's you're not actually trading any shares or any commodity or anything. It's like almost like a gamble on the price. Mm-hmm. So there's no extra risk on it. It's sort of same as trading, but once you know, cash out, there's no tax in the UK on your profits. So basically you don't have any capital gains tax. Yeah. So it is one of the massive advantages.
And that's in all the UK?
Yeah, it's all in the UK. I think it's, I don't think they do it anywhere else, unfortunately.
I'm looking for real estate there. Right?
Yeah, it's mental to think because, yeah, that's why, you know, some people are trading Forex or commodities or anything like that. It's, they can literally cash out and no tax.
Hmm.
Yeah, and it makes a difference. Remember, I think it's 20% over there. Well, it depends on the state, I guess.
It depends on also how much you made too.
Oh yeah, true.
Yeah.
So can you if you open up a long, like you throw a couple hundred pounds in, open up a long, can you go negative?
Or does it just close out your position?
No, you can go negative. It depends if you obviously have other money in your account. So you know, say you have £1,000 in your account, you chuck a few hundred pounds on, it will sort of take up that. The amount of money in your actual account. And obviously, if you go below that, they'll close it up or, you know, potentially margin call you beforehand.
Yeah, they always get their money, Dan.
Yeah. No, you can't.
There's no way to trick it.
I saw the Robinhood, some of the whole Robinhood traders went hundreds, like, I don't know if you saw that, the options traders, like young kids, went hundreds of thousands of dollars in negative, which is mental to think.
That was such a weird thing, too, because I think if you would have, I don't know if that was set to auto-liquidate those positions after the options expired, because I think that what happened was the options that he was holding expired in the money, and then it just purchased all the shares for him. But because he didn't actually have the money to hold the shares, I think it would have just liquidated those and given him basically the proceeds.
Okay.
Like if you just would have waited until, you know, the market opened the next day, he probably would have been fine.
Oh, yeah. Be freaked out.
But it's just the problem of letting somebody who has no fucking clue what they're doing. Like, you should never have been able to hold or leverage that big of a position.
Yeah, it is crazy. And I guess that's why, you know, you can say that a lot of these very speculative assets, why they've gone up so much, like NFTs, like collectibles, like, you know, because everyone's, obviously the barrier to entry has been lowered because you don't need that much money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fees are quite low. And these, you know, you don't have to go to a broker who will charge you an arm and a leg. You can just open up an app, you know, put in an app, put your, over here, you just put your driver's license on, and then you basically got an account. You don't need to tell them any other details. Yeah. So, you know, you can say that.
Couple that with so many people having so much free time now, then it's just ripe for people to be jumping in and learning how to do it.
Yeah, literally. And, you know, it is a good thing that people are trying to invest. I guess it's just about them doing it, you know, the right way. And maybe you guys, it sounds like, you know, you got the sims open and you're learning. That's the way to do it rather than I jumped straight in head first and that was definitely a mistake.
Well, we did that with options.
Oh, yeah.
I've had an expensive education with options for sure.
Literally, yeah. One of the guys I interviewed, he said the stock market is a very expensive place to learn who you are. That was his. I think he got it from someone else, but it's so true. And any market in general.
Well, one of the guys that we have on quite often, George Papazov from the TradePro Academy, where they gave us access to all their courses. But one of the things that he says is when you take a loss, then you just need to think of it as paying your tuition. Because there really isn't like a school that you can go to learn how to do all this stuff. Like you just have to, a lot of it's trial and error.
Yeah, literally. And I guess that's, a lot of people find that really like a struggle, don't they? There's no like black and white. There's no right or wrong. It's so much gray in between. And, you know, that's why I guess so many people struggle with it. And then obviously our emotions come into it and that just screws everything up. So
yep, it's all emotion.
Literally. But
I'm right and the market's wrong.
yeah. We get a bit vindictive, don't we? Where like, right. Yeah. It's going to turn around. Especially like...
Double down.
Shit. But
yeah, that is one of the more frustrating things. You can have all the indicators, all the qualifiers, everything looks like it's a good trade and you make the trade and then just the irrationality of the market doesn't respect that. Yeah.
Just not a good trade.
Yeah, it's a classic Warren Buffett quote. It's a voting machine, isn't it, in the short term? Stock markets.
It's a what?
It's a voting machine.
A voting machine. Oh, yeah. Hopefully it's just easier to understand than the ones that we have here.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Ooh, was that too political, Dan? Do we need to cut that?
Careful, they'll be after you. They'll come after you.
I know, right?
Yeah. I was warned. I interviewed this guy. He's from the US and he was like a geopolitical expert. And he's like, yeah, careful, the Chinese and Russian trolls will be after you. Because we talk very much about China and stuff like that.
We have bashed China like you wouldn't believe. And I've yet to see any trolls. We've been hoping for some.
Oh, it's fun. That's the thing. It's like, come on, come at me. I'm ready. I'm waiting.
Oh, do you want to start beef? We've been looking for someone to have beef with.
Yeah, literally. It's just exciting. I did just have like
a podcast feud.
Yeah. No, I don't know. Podcast. Yeah, we could do that. Like, just to, like simulate like a feud, and then like the boxers do. You know, they pretend like they're worst enemies, and they hug and they hug and laugh after the fight. Just
or like Andy Kaufman with that other wrestler,
Jerry Lawler.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well,
just need to get on the Tonight Show.
Yeah, I'll call my agent.
Someone's got to take a punch. Got to do it for the fame.
I'll do it. I'll take it. That's all it took was a shot in the mouth to get famous. We'd already be.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Damn, is that easy?
And I realized that sounded dirty.
Well, that's how Kim Kardashian did it.
No, true. I won't go that way, I don't think.
Do we have any fun stuff for Anthony? He says he's from Australia. I figure we could probably ask him some Australian questions.
Yeah, what's a good Australian food?
Good Australian food. We had a meat pie before.
I have had meat pie
before. Yeah, well, they're like...
Not an Australian meat pie.
No, they're like... pretty well known. I don't think there's anything special about them, so I don't know why they're well known, but I do know this place where they have like hundreds of pies, and I think they have like crocodile, and they have like all this like bacon and cheese and like all these great like curry pies and everything. But if you ever go to Australia, that is pretty well known. A Leamington. Have you heard of Leamington?
Mm-mm. No.
It's like a spongy cake with like chocolate and coconut surrounding it, which is quite good.
What's the deal with the gay bar?
The gay bar? What?
Is that not a popsicle down there?
Oh, yeah. The Golden Gay Time.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was thinking, like, what is he talking about now? Yeah, the Golden Gay Time. Yeah, that's it's a popsicle. Yeah, it's quite... kind of funny. I think it was named quite a few years ago when gay was obviously happy, but yeah, they're really tasty as well. If you go down, you should have one.
Can you explain Nutella's marketing schemes down there? Have they finally gotten away from their blackface celebration?
Oh, I haven't seen that actually.
I swear I was reading about that. They used to, because their Nutella is dark, put it on their face for some reason.
Oh my god. Oh yes. I think I saw something like
that. I think that happened a while ago. I think you guys moved on.
A few years ago, yeah. Or Vegemite as well. Have you guys heard of Vegemite?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah.
How thick should I spread the Vegemite on my toast?
Oh, it's very
it's a personal thing.
It's up in negotiation. Yeah, very personal. Yeah. So I do it not very thick, but some people like lather it like half a jar of it. I think it's got a very distinct taste that I don't think you'd want too much, but Some people are not.
I've pulled up a website here. This should offer some fun. It's how to swear like an Australian. So I'm going to give you some phrases and have you explain what they actually mean.
Yeah, translate them.
Yeah.
Just drop the C bomb, basically.
Yeah. that was on there. fuck me dead.
Yeah.
Fair suck of the salve. What is that?
What is it?
Fair suck of the salve.
Fair suck of the salve. Oh, I'm not sure. There's this one funny bloke. He's a rugby player. His name's the Honey Badger.
Nice.
And he talks. He's got long blonde curly hair. It's great. He talks classic. It's almost Australian country lingo, and it's perfect. Right up the drain pipe. I was sweating like a gypsy with a mortgage. Sweating like a one-armed bricklayer in Baghdad, just shit like that. And so some people they have those analogies.
What's a darrow?
A darrow. Oh, how do you explain it? Maybe a hillbilly sort of.
Your version of redneck?
Yeah, redneck. Bogan as well is sort of similar to that. Bogan,
yep, I see that here.
Yeah.
Drongo,
yeah. It's we have so many names just for the same thing. It's just no one's in the end to anything.
There's some great stuff on here.
I proudly admit I come from proud Drongo heritage.
No. Yeah. I won't go any more in depth into that then. I'm going to start slacking them off.
How mad would you be if I said you had dad's disease?
I haven't heard that one.
Okay. It's an acronym for dumb as a dog.
Oh,
dumb
okay.
as dog shit.
Yeah. Oh, there's a mug like a sucked mango. That's someone who's really ugly. Yeah, it's stuff like that. Since you've been away, you don't remember. I've been away for a few years, but yeah.
Well, these are too obvious, fuckwit and fuckstick. I mean,
But dropping the C-bomb, it's it can be either endearing to a friend. There's two ways, endearing or you're being aggressive.
Good to see you again.
Yeah, literally, hey, cunt, how you going? stuff like that. Or oh, you can't. That's more aggressive. it is quite common.
Right. Works both ways.
There's actually a place in the UK, in Wales, called Carnarvon, and it's very common there as well. It's literally one village for some reason. Everyone just says that. If anyone goes to Wales, be careful. They might rough you up.
have you heard any of the Cockney rhyming slang? Rhyming slang since you've been down there?
I've heard some. I'm not in London, unfortunately, so I haven't heard as much, but... some of it's crazy. Some of it's crazy.
Yeah, I think what is it? Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels had I think in the extras it had an explanation of what all the words meant. Yeah.
Well, I think everyone just brings up these analogies, and I think a lot of them was because they were doing a lot of legal shit as well, so it was a way for them to sort of get away with it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, is there a particular area of Australia where I might need a translation book to even though we're both speaking English?
Yeah, probably. If you so any of the big cities, you'll probably be okay. But if you venture outside, then you'd need some help. Probably it's similar. I think it's similar to the US, where except probably not as many big cities, obviously, and it's not as you can drive hours and there's nothing, and you get to some towns and there's 50 people and they're all crazy and they all just spend all their time in the pub in the bar every night. And one of my girlfriend's friends had to if you're an international, you have to do farm work to sort of get another visa. So she was doing farm work, and she just said they're all crazy. The guy who owned the bar was an alcoholic, and they had to lock him out, and it was quite bad actually. But yeah, apparently it's just it's a different place. If you venture outside the cities, it's very different.
Dan, even in America, you need a translator in some places. Go meet some of the hill people in the Appalachians or the Bayou.
Yeah, the rednecks.
But I feel like I could go to most places and understand and be understood.
Yeah, you'd probably be all right. Obviously, a lot of the Aboriginals who are traditional people, they have their own languages. So you probably struggle with that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you probably need a lot of help with that.
Yeah, there's like 500 different languages across the country.
So. That's what popped into my head immediately when he said that, when he asked his question. I was like, you're probably going to have a hard time understanding.
No, you got no chance. But one thing I was interested in, like, my girlfriend's from Wales, and they actually have their own language, which I never knew. I don't know if you guys have knew
Gaelic,
that
Gaelic, right?
Well, it's actually Welsh. It's Welsh.
That's right. Yeah, yep, yep.
And they've all got their own language, and yeah, I'd never heard of that before. So that was like a bit of a curveball in it all.
And it's not a Germanic language, and it's not a Latin language. It's a very unique language.
Yeah, well, I think there's like 8 or 9 of them. There's like a Scottish, like Gaelic in Scotland, there's Gaelic in Ireland. There's like Brittany, which is like northern France. They have their own language. Cornwall, which is like a sort of like a county or state in the UK, and they have their own language as well. So it's like all these basically countries, all these places that weren't invaded by the Germans or the Vikings or the Romans or anything. Yeah, or the French or any of those people, which is pretty cool.
Well, this has been a really great time. Thanks for coming by the shop, Anthony. It's been great having you.
Yeah, thanks so much. We didn't actually end up talking that much about NFTs in the end, did we?
we spent the first half of it, I think, and then we just kind of meandered from there.
Yeah.
No, that's all right. I don't mind it. Yeah. I like having a chat. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
For sure. For sure. Kyle, any closing thoughts?
No, I think we'll have to try and do this again, though. Anthony, where can everybody find you if they want to hear more?
Yeah. Thanks so much, guys.
If they want to actually hear you talk about NFTs.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's funny. I actually haven't talked that much about NFTs, which is I'm going to expand into it more. But as you mentioned at the start, I'm the host of the What the Finance podcast. So it's like spelled WTF. Finance, sort of like that. So everyone hopefully knows. I'm also on Twitter as well, just under my name, Anthony Fatsies. But yeah, those are probably the best places to find my podcast, is on YouTube, Spotify, or iTunes, or anywhere you can find amazing podcasts like this one.
All right,
wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. All right, folks, there you have it. We're gonna have the links to the What the Finance podcast in the episode description. And until next time, happy trades.
Thanks for joining us. You can find us off air at twobullsinachinashop.com. That's the number 2bullsinachinashop.com. Make sure you check us out. Download us on any streaming network. Blah, 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 blah. You know what to do. Rate, subscribe.
Two Bulls in a China Shop is an entertainment program, and all thoughts and opinions expressed in the show belong to the hosts and not of any company. They are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide entertainment about stocks and the financial industry of trading. If you make trades based on what you hear in this show, you assume all risks for those trades.